I'm going to start us off with some prayer. Dear Lord, thank you for this day and bringing us here. And we pray you'd be with us. Fill our minds with what you want to tell us today as we read from your text you've given us, and inspire us to live it out. In Jesus' name, amen. So, you can help me name the title of this when we're done. But the hint is, well, the hint for those from a Western background, I'm not giving this Bible study on the 1st of April. It is the 25th of May. And I want to look at two texts that throughout the week jumped into my mind together, and it may be somewhat of a poetic or a I don't know what kind of link, but the texts are 1 Samuel 25 and Luke 12. So
if your hint was the first of April,
you don't have to fill it out yet. Please do not fill it out.
The song would be Steeler's Wheel, about having jokers to the left and clowns to the right.
Jokers to the left and clowns to the right. That's right. That would be Christian Bob Dylan.
That's not Bob Dylan.
No?
That's Steeler's Wheel.
But Bob Dylan also did.
He may have sung the song.
He sang a song, yeah. Anyway, this isn't about Bob Dylan. This is about... I'll fill you in. It's Luke, from Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12. I will give you the verses in a little bit. But first I want to start at 1 Samuel 25. Okay, so we're jumping right in to in the middle of Saul and David. Saul has been pursuing David, and actually the story before in chapter 24 and 26 are about how Saul is pursuing David, and David's had a chance to take Saul out, and he decides not to. He acts very, very noble, so to speak. And he chooses not to pay back wrong to his enemy. He pays back good. And I'm calling Saul an enemy here because, of course, he's chasing him down to kill him as competitor of the throne. So right in the middle, sandwiched in the middle of these two stories, we have 1 Samuel 25. And this is the story about a man. That's how it starts out. And a woman that David meets. Okay, so we're going to read the introduction. Maybe we'll read verses 1 to 3. If someone wants to, would you be able to read that for us?
Then Samuel died, and the Israelites gathered together and lamented for him, and buried him at his home in Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. Now there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel, and the man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. The name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. And she was a woman of good understanding and beautiful appearance, but the man was harsh and evil in his doings. He was of the house of Caleb.
All right. So a couple things to consider. We hear that there's some man down in Maon. Apparently that's south of Hebron, which is, I guess, on the borderline of Judah. So way out in the boonies. We also hear that David left after Samuel died to go to Midbar Paran, which is maybe loosely defined. Most of the time it's referring to Sinai, the peninsula of Sinai, but or at times it can be. It can also be other desert areas down south. So I don't know, I was wondering why David got up and went down south right after Samuel died, and I thought, well, maybe Samuel's his biggest supporter, he's the one that anointed David king. And now if he dies, there's just Saul, who certainly is not his supporter. And so maybe this is a bit of an escape, going way down to the borderline, that he can exit the kingdom quickly if he needs to. I don't know. Anyway, he's down there. And Carmel, we're not talking about the Carmel where Elijah was, way up in the north, the nice green Carmel. This is another Carmel, also in the same vicinity, maybe a kilometer and a half away from where Maon is. So what else do we find out? Before we even find out a name of a character, we find out that there was this great big man. Big in the sense of rich. Maybe big in other senses as well. We don't know. He has 1,000 goats and plenty of sheep. 3,000 sheep. And what time of year is this?
Sheep
shearing.
What would that be?
When would you shear sheep?
After winter.
Before the summer.
Before the summer, the beginning of summer. They no longer need their wool, and they'll have enough time for it to grow back by winter. And the sheep here have nice long wool that can be used. So, the beginning of summer, I could compare that to today. Feels like summer. it's hot, and they're in the south. So they're kind of out in the deserty, at least in the summertime, very deserty areas. Okay, what else happens? A little bit of background about sheep shearing. Many times, I mean, if you look throughout history, not just here in the Middle East, but elsewhere, herds get put together. And so sometimes the big person, the dominant person in a clan or in a town, would be responsible for many herds, and you bring them all together to shear them. It's easier that way, and it's also typically accompanied with feasting. I mean, anytime you have communal events, you feast, right? Harvest, you feast. So sheep shearing would be a time when you'd be having a nice celebration. And we do know that Nabal is a rich man. And he's out shearing his sheep. Presumably other people are shearing their sheep. And they're all celebrating. And how do you celebrate? You have good food.
Wine.
You have good wine. That's right. So they're having a party.
Sounds like you got raised right.
Guess so. They're throwing a party. It's the beginning of summer. And now we find out this person's name. Okay, his name is Nabal. And his wife's name is Abigail. Now first we find out a little bit about his wife. Other than Nabal, we don't find out more. What do we know about his wife?
Intelligent.
And beautiful. Notice which comes first. Tovat Sechel. She's good of brain. She's good of understanding. And she's pretty. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us people are good looking unless it's going to be somehow significant to our story. So, and it doesn't tell us really much about them unless it's going to be significant to the story.
How many people are called Tovat Sechel?
I don't know if anyone besides her. Many times you hear Tovat Mar'e, good of appearance. And especially with Yifat Toar, those are like two synonyms that often come together. So you could see that he's purposely taken a known synonym, and instead of Tovat Mar'e that you're expecting, you get Tovat Sechel. So it's almost like it's highlighted. She's good, not of appearance, but understanding. Oh, and pretty, by the way. So, another interesting thing, we're in 1 Samuel 25. Another interesting thing about that is getting this attribute focused right in the beginning, Tovat Sechel, also provides a form of a foil to her husband. And then you have other descriptions of the husband afterwards. So let's look at what her husband's name could mean. Naval. Who would name their son Naval?
Is it the main word for fool?
Well, it depends what it comes from. And nobody can really be sure what originally it comes from. But as we all know from biblical stories, that doesn't always matter. Because whether or not the word comes from such and such a root, it's how that person has lived. You can play with their name based on how it sounds or other usages of that root. And the author in this section definitely plays with Naval's name. And in fact, although you could say it's typical to say there was a man and his name was Lala, the fact that it says there was a man and describes what he does and then you say his name, I kind of think that the author's on purpose doing that to show he's going to play with the name. So we have his wife being Tovat Sechel, good of understanding. Naval, if you look in Deuteronomy 32:6, God, this is a poem that's supposed to remind the people to be faithful to their God at the end of the book of the law of Deuteronomy. God says, is this how you repay the Lord, you foolish, unwise people? And in Hebrew it says, Hala Adonai tigmelu zot am naval velo chacham. Halo hu avicha konecha hu osecha vichonenecha.
What was that, Deuteronomy 5? What?
Deuteronomy 32, oh. Verse 6. Naval velo chacham. Okay? So we have naval there translated as fool, followed by the word and not wise. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting. Gary did a Bible study about a month ago, I think, about wisdom. He referred to wisdom language and how a fool isn't what you think of as someone clowning around and just kind of stupid and slapstick. A fool, to be a fool is not to be wise, yes, but it's wisdom is following God, is fearing God. So if you're a fool, it's not just that you're dumb, it's that you don't understand what's important in life. You are immoral. You don't understand who God is and what that means. And so it's actually, it's a form of evil, more than just, you know, poor person wasn't born with a lot of brains. It's how you're using your brains, how you're perceiving. So, in this sense, the people in Deuteronomy have forgotten God, and so their actions are not going to be fearing Him. And that makes them foolish and unwise. Okay, so Naval we have here as fool. We have elsewhere as fool. If you would look in the book of Proverbs, you would find this word quite often. It's not the only word for fool. We have evil. But it is one of the words for fool.
How is evil spelled with them?
Evil.
Evil.
Aleph, Vav, Yud, Lamed. Okay. Other things from the, if we were just to look at the letters of his name, Nun, Bet, Lamed, Naval, you could also come up with the word, well, we're going to get later in the story, Nevala. What is Nevala? Guess it could be foolishness, but more typically used as some deed that should not be done. It's a shameful, disgraceful, evil thing to do. So you have this connection to wickedness. And as I said, the fool isn't so far from the wicked in the Bible's eyes. And two other interesting passages I want to bring to our attention today use the word naval as fool, contrasted to another word, nadiv. And what is nadiv?
Nadiv.
Nadiv. And again, that can change for us as well. Like any language, you have different contexts, and the same word can mean different things. But occasionally, nadiv means a generous person. Other places, it gets kind of crazy. If you're trying to read the Bible in English, you might not find this word all the time, because sometimes it's translated honorable men, sometimes ruler, sometimes princes, sometimes generous person. So it makes it a little hard to track down.
Is it possible that naive is derived from nadiv? Because sometimes, sometimes it's, of course, we're going to help each other, but sometimes we're naive and we think people take advantage of us as it really don't mean us any good, just use it.
Well, being naive. Maybe something to be repented of. It's not connected to nadiv. For one, naive is coming from French. I don't know if it goes back to Latin, but Semitic languages are quite different. But nadiv is also, it can be associated with wicked people. But more typically, it's honorable. They're the princes. It's a good thing, actually. And if you look quickly to Isaiah 32:5. Isaiah, you've heard me say many times, is one of my favorite authors because he's so well read and he is very artful with his words. He is a poet. And he always chooses things carefully to pack a punch. And like any poetry, he can be hard to understand. But if you look at Isaiah 32:5, he starts off, it's parallelism. The second line is kind of more difficult to understand, but it says, Lo yikare od lenaval nadiv. So he is posing the naval and the nadiv as opposites here. So we're not going to call a fool any longer an honorable person. And he's got the two nun, naval, nadiv. It makes nice linkage. Vele chilai lo ye'amer shoah. That's a little more difficult. We also find the same opposites, I believe, if you look at, let me double check myself, Proverbs 17:7. Yes. So again, we're in wisdom literature, Gary pointed out. And naval features quite a bit, actually, in the wisdom books. And so does nadiv, incidentally, which is a less common word. I think it only comes, 27 times in the Bible. And almost all, besides a couple of places in Exodus and Chronicles, they almost come in Sifrei Emet, which are Job, Proverbs, Psalms, and then also Song of Songs. Anyway, that's just so you know what type of language we're talking about. So we're in Proverbs 17:7. And the NET translation has, excessive speech is not becoming for a fool. How much less are lies for a ruler? And the word there that they've translated ruler is nadiv. What, do you all have ruler? Or do you have anything else?
A great man.
A great man?
Yeah.
More along the lines of honorable man? What else?
Prince.
Prince, okay. Yeah, that's another one.
Ruler.
Ruler. Yeah. So if you want to listen in Hebrew, Lo na'aval le naval. That's nice. Svat yeter. Afki le nadiv svat shaker. Again, nice poetry. We're in Proverbs. So nice little chunks of aphorisms to remember. But the point I'm trying to make out of this verse is that naval is being contrasted to nadiv. And as a, whether you want to take it as a ruler or an honorable man, there's this association. I guess we call in English, we have noblemen and gentlemen. When we say the word, we don't actually think they're noble or gentle necessarily. We know that they're just a high-ranking person. But they do have the ability to be gentle. They don't have to do rough work. And noble, because presumably they're rich, right? And so they could be lavish with people. They could be generous. I hope we can all be generous. But there is still that connection somewhere of generosity. Now, you could find other places where nadiv is used in the sense of generous or willing. If you're willing to make a gift offering to the Lord, there's several places in Exodus. So that's even more interesting to me if we were to think about Nadiv as a generous person, because you have him translated to Naval the fool. Okay. Proverbs 19:6. Okay, in Proverbs 19:6, we have Rabin yehalu ne nadiv, v'chol harea le'ish matan. So here, nadiv is being parallel to ish matan, a person giving. And indeed, my net Bible has translated, many people entreat the face of a generous person, and everyone is a friend of the person who gives gifts. Do you all have something like a generous person?
No.
No, what do you have?
I have this great man.
The great man. Okay. So they're trying to be... The Jewish translation. They're trying to be more consistent, to use a kind of the same translation. But again, the word in Hebrew is nadiv. So in Proverbs 19:6, this word is translated as a generous person. And this word can be contrasted with the fool. So those are some interesting things in the background of Naval, Nabal, his name, that can influence the way we understand our story. So whether you want to say Nadiv is noble, generous, willing, the opposite would be Naval, ignoble, immoral, unwilling to give. Then, if we look back at our story, let's look back to 1 Samuel 25. We have a further description that he is Ha'ish Kashe, like this table here. He's hard. Vera Ma'alalin, and wicked of action. Vehu Chelibo, that's the written text, but Kalibi is the Kre, how you should read it, so apparently from the Calebites. And other people say that that part of his name, if he's a Calebite, that's also played with further on in the story. Someone suggested when he threatens to wipe out Nabal, everyone who Mashtin Bekir, that the image is related to a dog. But we'll get there. And I'll translate Mashtin Bekir when we get there. But there is a little textual thing about Kelev, Kalev. Kalev is not the same as Kelev. Kelev is dog. Kalev is like a heart or some other derivation. But they are the people seconded to Judah in the south, right? And according to other genealogical relationships, we are in the territory of Calebite. So it seems like the intention was that he's a Calebite. Okay. So, to skip that little textual thing, back to him being hard and evil, I mentioned earlier that Naval is associated with wickedness, especially Nevala. I think of Amnon and Tamar. She says, don't do this Nevala. Don't do this shameful thing, this evil thing. And there are many, and that was incest. So there are many examples of the word Nevala used as much more than folly, more like disgraceful action. So we have his name meaning several things. I think just from this first little introduction, we have him contrasted with his wife, who is good of brain. The implication is he is not so good of brain, right? His name is Naval, and he is hard. You could say hard-hearted, and maybe that's being contrasted with this sense of Naval and Nadiv, Nadiv being the generous person, Naval being the hard-hearted, ungenerous person. And all these things are going on in your mind, because as a speaker of the language, you don't just hear the word, you hear a word and what it means in all its contexts. You also hear what word they didn't use. And so you can play on people's names. You can play on the audience's background. And these are things that can't be translated, because different languages have different connections between their words. Like if I make a pun on the word sun in English, I can do that because there is a word S-O-N and S-U-N, and they sound the same. And so I can say the sun is shining on you, and I can spell S-O-N, and I can be referring to Jesus the Son. Now I can't translate that and still keep that play, because not every language has those two connections in their language. So some things just cannot be translated. That's why it's nice to be able to have some kind of access to the original languages. And again, of course your translations are dependable in terms of giving you a message. Just like you can translate a joke and why it should be funny, but at the end of that, you're not going to laugh. You're going to be like, oh, okay. If you want to laugh, you have to hear the joke in the original language. So, in a sense, although this is a serious story, there are elements that inside you're kind of chuckling about. And there's a wisdom to that, because when you chuckle and enjoy a text, you tend to ruminate on it more, and it will make an impression on you. Anyway, so, all that to say, Naval and Abigail are characters. Naval is out there shearing a sheep, and David hears about it. That's our first action of the story. So he hears, so all this assumption, he knows Naval is shearing a sheep, that means he's rich, he's having a party. David's out in the middle of nowhere. His big defender has just died. He's kind of, you could say, vulnerable. Saul's just tried to kill him the chapter before. So he is needing some help. So he sends 10 na'arim. He sends 10 boys. In other words, 10 of his servants, of his men, to go to Carmel. And he wants them to talk to Naval, to greet him in his name. Okay, and what does he want them to say? Maybe someone can read in verse 6. To 8. Read 6 to 8.
Say to him, long life to you, good health to you and your household, and good health to all that is yours. Now I hear that it is sheep shearing time. When your shepherds were with us, we did not mistreat them, and the whole time they were at Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. Ask your own servants, and they will tell you. Therefore, be favorable toward my men, since we come at a festive time. Please give your servants and your son David whatever you can find for them.
Okay, notice there's that little bit of realia thrown in. We've come at a festive time. Now's the time for a feasting. I know you've already prepared all this food for all the shearers. Could you give a little bit? And he's asking modestly, whatever your hand finds. Can you spare a little bit for us too? Okay, so this is not... The writer wants to show how David is being very polite. It's not a far-fetched request. And we get Nabal's answer. Read verse 9. And notice how he's using, you know, your servants. He's using the language to a superior. So he's putting himself in a humble position. Okay, so Nabal answers. The servants have given their report in verse 9. Read Nabal's answer in verse 10. Anybody?
Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There are many slaves nowadays who run away from their masters. Should I then take my bread and my water and the meat that I slaughtered from my own shearers and give them to men who come from I don't know where?
Okay. So, he's really putting down David here. Obviously, he knows who David is. When he says, who is David? It's a rhetorical question because he says the son of Jesse. So he knows exactly who David is. And he knows he's a contender for the throne. And here we see him say, you know, many slaves are rebelling against their masters. So he's basically saying, you know, you're no better than a slave. You're a bunch of vagabonds. And I don't have to do anything for you. He's also implying that Saul is the master and David as a slave has been disloyal to him. Now here I can see there's two follies going on. One is he's not being very generous, clearly. The other is, even if he were a rebelling slave of Saul, if he knew there was a band of thugs rebelling against the king and they're asking for something, what would you do? I mean, just to save your own skin, I'd give them something. So not too bright on that account either. You could say downright selfish. Should I give my own bread and water? And let me tell you, he's got much more than bread and water there. So he has given them a very shameful, disgraceful answer. And he's called them all slaves. Even though they came to him very politely, he's kind of like turned them away in disgrace. So they go back and they tell everything he said, and David gets very upset. And so they all get ready to make war on him. And now it gives us in verse 13 how many people we're talking about. How many is it? 400?
200.
600. So 200 sat with their utensils, their camp, their other stuff, and 400 geared up to go get revenge on Nabal. You better hope Nabal has a similar fleet with him. Okay, so now enter Abigail in verse 14. One of her servants comes and tells her, David has sent messengers from the desert to greet our Lord. Vaya'at bahem. And he discarded them or pecked them away. I don't know. How do you translate? Net has, he screamed at them.
Reviled.
Reviled? He, exeklinen in Greek, he turned them away. You say spurn them?
Mm-hmm. Hurled insults.
Hurled insults. I like that one. Okay.
It's funny, the root in Arabic for that is preach.
Preach?
The same root.
Really? What is
the root? We hope you don't preach that way. And if you notice, David had asked, he didn't even say all the good things he had done for Nabal's servants before. He said, you ask your own servants and let them tell you how he treated them. And so now, apparently Nabal didn't even ask his servants, right? He gave his answer directly.
Is the idea, though, that they were in the field and he protected them? Or is the idea that he didn't rob them? Because you've got this sort of band of people?
Maybe both.
I gave you a big favor before, so it sounds like extortion. Is that what it ends up sounding like to you at all?
Yeah, I think not one of their cattle or sheep is missing is the first one. He didn't rob you. And then his presence
but
as an armed person.
He's not necessarily protecting you. He may have just not taken advantage.
Right. Although if you have 600 armed people, the chances of a thief coming up and trying to pick off something will go down because your security is really big. Uh-huh. So in that sense, just his presence is a protection.
And he supervises men, so there was none of his men.
None of his men were taking advantage too. And they say here in verse 15, and the people were good to us, very good to us. Mm-hmm. And they didn't take anything. Okay. They were a wall to us, even at night, at day and night. Okay. So now look and know what you should do. So they obviously trust her to make good decisions. And the servants also call, look in verse 17. They call about their master, Vehu ben Blia'al, midaber elav. Okay, he's a son of worthlessness, which in many contexts is worse than worthless. It's downright evil. So my translation has, he's such a wicked person that no one tells him anything. Okay, so Abigail quickly takes, what does she take? Enormous amounts.
Bread.
This shows you, by the way, they did have a feast prepared because she takes 200 breads, 2 nivle yain. Again, you hear echoes of his word, naval. Nevel is a big wine jug. Mm. 5 lambs that were already prepared.
Is that just a nice literary flourish?
Yes and no. It features in our story because he gets drunk later on. Okay, so we'll get there in a second because I have to skip to my link as well. So she takes tons of the prepared feast and she loads them on donkeys and she's trying to make amends. So she probably gave a little extra than she would have if he had come directly to her. She says, I'm coming after you. And she didn't tell her husband. That's a good thing in this case. Okay, so David and his men are coming down to take vengeance, and she meets them. And you have this little interlude of David talking to himself. You know, I've done all of this good in vain. I didn't take anything from him, but he repaid my good with evil. And so he says, may God deal with me very severely if I leave alive until morning. Even one, what do you have?
One male.
Male.
Yeah, but it does mean some of them pees against the wall.
Some of that pees against the wall. Okay, they've used nice language there.
Perfect.
Right. Yeah, I guess I won't give you the, that is more or less literal. Someone who pees on the wall. Someone has pointed out that they're making fun. I mentioned at the beginning of the Bible study. They're making fun of Kalev being not from Caleb, but from like a dog, Kalev. And so someone who pees on the wall like a dog. And you can play on his name that way. So he's not going to leave alive a single male. And by the way, dogs in the Bible and even Middle East today are not esteemed animals. They are the low rank. Okay, so Abigail sees David. She gets down quickly, bows to the ground, and she has very nice words to say. Let's jump. We're going to skip a little intro. Verse 25. She says, don't pay attention to this worthless man. Again, she uses the same word. Ish Habeliyaal. Al Naval. Don't pay attention to this worthless man, to Naval. Because, like his name, so he is. Okay, so that's why we got into what we could possibly come up with from his name, because there's all kinds of directions. And she gives Naval Shmo. Naval is his name. Unevala Imo. Which you could say, well, my Net Bible interestingly says, his name means fool, and he is indeed foolish. So they went more with the fool. You could say Nevalas also, you know, that we mentioned the disgraceful thing, the evil. So Naval is foolish in the sense of wicked. Does anyone have wicked there?
And this one has poor.
Poor?
Boor.
Boor. Okay. Yeah. Boorish. Sure.
I have folly.
Folly?
Fool and folly, this one too.
Fool and folly. Good. And again, we have from the introduction that he is a hard person and evil of ways. What he does, his actions are evil. So there's that same connection between foolish isn't just stupid, it's evil, not understanding who God is.
Sharon, I have one troubling thought. You know, oftentimes when David was cursed, he would forgive, you know.
Uh-huh.
This time, I mean, he must have been in desperate need of the supplies or provisions.
I think so. I think he's vulnerable.
Yeah.
And also, like, again, there's this contrast because the stories before and after, he's very generous in what he does to Saul. He lets him off, even when he could have taken vengeance. So in that sense, it shows that here, the situation's reversed, and he actually maybe has more of a moment of lack of...
It seems that way,
largest.
That he's caught off guard somehow. From his
caught off
character.
Guard, right.
Isn't it also because God commanded him, he could speak to him for a reason, and he said, touch not my anointed. Because, you know, he told David to touch not my anointed. He said,
sure.
I get it that the Lord wanted to finally bring Saul to an end his way. And
sure,
and
yeah. So David had a command not to touch his anointed, but... David seemed to understand that command when everybody else may have found it more legitimate had he gotten rid of Saul. I mean, something that happens all the time, later on in Israel's history too. But I think it shows David's specialness in that regard. But here you see definitely the humanity of David, that he can have his own little feelings of vengeance. However, it's also, I think our author shows how he lays it out where it was a very legitimate request. And like you said, he was caught off guard. I think maybe because he was so much expecting that he'd get something that, it really surprised him. Like, what? You're not going to give anything? Anyway, so Abigail stops him from acting out on those feelings of vengeance. And she has very wise and persuasive words to do that. And apparently, if you look in verse 27, she even knows about David and Goliath. He will sling away the lives of your enemies from the sling's pocket. The reputation of David and the sling. She's using his own history, in a sense. And she says, you know, God's going to make you leader over Israel. So, you know...
Like she's prophesying.
Right. You know. So basically, don't be bothered by this light, this put-down, because, you know, you're way bigger than that. It's always good to start off, by the way, with flattery if you're trying to get someone to do something. And she says, don't let your conscience be overwhelmed with guilt. You don't want to have innocent blood. and she convinces him. And he says, praise be your good judgment. Ta'amech, baruch ta'amech, your wisdom. Okay. So we know the rest of the story. I'm going to have to jump to get to my point. But you notice later on that as he is... Oh, she doesn't tell him at first because he's drunk, right? And so again, you have that imagery of the neven, the wine jar. He's full of wine, just like a neven. And so she's going to wait till the wine goes out. So you get this image of the jar being poured out. And then, what happens when he finds out about what goes on? His heart dies. And we had that word in the beginning that he's an ish kashe, he's a hard person. You could maybe connect with the heart here, because he becomes like a stone. You think of stone-hearted, that kind of works in English too. And then 10 days later, he dies. So I don't know what happened. Did he have some kind of heart attack and not recover? Stroke? Something? It wasn't instant. There's 10 days later, and then he dies. The net, again, translates, he had a stroke and was paralyzed. So literally, his heart died inside of him, and he was like a stone.
Sure. Stroke.
I see a contrast between David, who was... at a moment of doing something maybe wrong, and he praises Abigail for her, what did you call it, her good judgment.
Her good judgment.
Whereas when Nabal gets reprimanded, his heart dies. It shows that wicked people don't use the occasion when
to learn.
Yeah, to learn.
So although David had that that bad inclination, you could say, he was hot tempered in a sense. His heart was soft to correction as well. And I think it's the attitude of the heart that is the big contrast here, where Nabal didn't. He remained in denial, and he became harder. He became a rock. That was his end. And of course, you know, you have a happy end of the story is David and Abigail get married. But that's not the happy end of our Bible study. Let's look, all this in mind, to Luke 12. Oh, sorry, hold on. Luke 12, I have a specific reference. I want the start of the reference. Let's start in 13. Okay. Alright. Then someone from the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But Jesus said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator between you two?" Then he said to them, "Watch out and guard yourself from all types of greed, because one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." He then told them a parable. "The land of a certain rich man produced an abundant crop. He thought to himself, 'What should I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.'" What would you do? Let's say you get a salary and you get a bonus. What do?
Buy stock.
You could buy stock.
That's our barn today.
You could set up a little college fund if you still have children. You could set up a retirement fund. You could go on a vacation to Greece. You could...
you could share it with somebody. Doesn't have anything.
Charity.
You could share it with someone who doesn't have anything.
Yes.
Okay. "What should I do if I have nowhere to store my crops?" Verse 18. Then he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to myself, you have plenty of goods stored up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and celebrate. I think Naval HaKarmeli would agree with him up to this. You know, oh, I have a little extra, I'll save it away. Now, is saving a bad thing?
I don't know. It's kind of a big question.
It's a big question.
It was the right thing to do for Joseph.
Seems like that we're not.
Yeah, no, it's not a bad thing in and of itself.
Jesus says if you have food and raiment, think you're blessed.
Right. No, it's a good thing to have. You could say it's wise. You know, I was thinking about Proverbs when it says, go to the ant, consider its ways and be wise. And what do ants do?
Store up.
Right now, so what's the problem with ants right now? My kitchen floor, which is also my living room floor, if my son drops a speck of food and I leave for 20 minutes, I come back and there are ants all over that piece trying to take it away. Those things are fat. And they are storing for the winter. Even right now, summer hasn't even started yet, or I guess it is starting, and they're already storing. So to store for the future is actually a wise thing. However...
But this guy sounds like he's already got above and beyond that.
It does. And the fact that you have him talking to himself, you have a little picture of his thoughts. I have plenty of goods stored up for many years.
Already.
Yeah.
This is now... surplus.
And he's saying, like, he's only thinking about him, basically.
He's thinking temporary. He's not thinking eternal.
Right. Temporary in the sense of earthly, but future in the sense of the rest of his life. He's imagining retirement for the next 20, 30 years. I don't know
it's
how old
retirement.
He is.
It's retirement.
Yeah. But the point is, he's thinking about himself only. So the answer to his question, what should I do with this extra stuff I've just gotten? Oh, well, I'll save it for myself, of course. And now I can celebrate even more and relax.
So Sharon, well, this is...
the extra?
Yeah, the surplus idea, is it really there, you guys?
In the beginning, the man produced an abundant crop.
And he's already
and he's
got
a rich man.
And he's already got storerooms and barns, and those are already full.
So
yep. he's saying
he's called a rich man in verse 16. Some lego anthropou tinos.
They're already full.
Well, he says he's got to tear those down and build bigger ones.
Yeah. Correct, but I don't see that contrast, what I see here is an abundant harvest at the end of verse 16.
Right.
And he looks at this harvest and he says, what am I going to do? I don't have a place to gather it. Meaning that, let's say he's got one of these little keter plastic sheds.
Right.
Okay, and all of a sudden he's got a hundredfold harvest.
Right.
He's going, well, it doesn't mean that the keter is already full, but it does mean that it's certainly not going to hold the harvest.
So we're arguing for his, he's an average guy with relative wisdom. He just simply doesn't have a place for it.
He says, wow, this a harvest like this, what am I going to do?
Again, though, I would say that a rich person probably has a little bigger of a storage unit than a keter, plastic storage unit.
Because he's saying, I got to tear them down and build greater.
But that besides, again, the focus is his attitude. That when he comes up with something extra, his attitude is me. And so what does God call him?
A fool.
God calls him, you fool. But God said to him, you fool.
Afron.
Which sometimes translates the word naval. I don't know what Jesus said originally, but it's an interesting link to the story we read. You fool, this very night your life will be demanded back from you. But who will get what you have prepared for yourself? And so, in this case, a fool is someone who is not generous. As 1 John says, when you see your brother in need and have no pity on him, how can the love of God be in you? So the idea is when you have enough, and you could get in what is enough, and someone else doesn't, what is your heart's response? You can be numb and say, it's not my issue. Who is David, son of Jesse? You know, it doesn't have to do with me. Or you could say, you could identify with that person. That could be me. What's the difference? That's a human. I'm a human. I have enough. I can get rid of some stuff to help them out. And so that's, I guess, what has been motivating me this week. I don't want to be the fool. And I don't want to have more than enough and not be generous with it. And again, you can always look to people above you and say, well, there's richer people. But I think it's safe to say on a world scale, everyone sitting in this room right now is rich. So we don't really have that luxury, no pun intended, to not evaluate what we have and say, is it more than enough? How can I cut it and give? Or if you have extra, how can I give to other people?
So then if you draw that comparison of not being generous with actually being immoral, in a world that's so needy, we're actually immoral to hold back.
Exactly.
Like in a good eye, Jesus says, if your eye is sound, meaning if you're a generous person, your whole body.
This whole concept of a fool being someone who doesn't fear God, who doesn't recognize that loving other people is loving God. And so you, in the same category, the fool is the wicked, is the greedy. That's in the same camp.
Would you like to hear what the Septuagint says at 1 Samuel 25:25?
Sure.
It says, "Kata to onoma aftu, utos estin."
Right. As his name is, that's what he is.
Naval onoma aftu.
His name is Naval.
Ke afrosune met aftu.
And foolishness is with him.
The same word as in the.
Afron. Jesus. Afron is a fool.
Afron's
yeah.
The adjective, and afrosune is a noun.
And afron typically translates naval. It isn't, of course, it isn't the only one. You know, you could be evil or other words. That's why I'm saying in Jesus' words, I don't know if he used naval or if he used evil, but it could be. It could be.
Afrosune is nice.
But there it is, a literal connection, afrosune. Foolishness, and here we have the afron, the fool. This very night, your life will be demanded back from you. So I leave you to ruminate on those and hopefully apply it to your life. And let's go downstairs for the worship service.